You can check out science teacher Sam Long's work at genderinclusivebiology.com. Next time, Queerly Yours, Profiles in Courage with Roger Q. Mason, features Ricky Nathanson, Senior Advisor of the Global Trans Program for Outright Action International.
This Way Out is supported in part by contributions from our listeners.
Some give a little each month. Some make a larger annual contribution.
More information and a link to give are online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Sarah Montague and Michael LeBeau, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from Roger Q. Mason, produced with Brian DeShazer and David Gonzalez. Sam Cooke and Huey Lewis in the News performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Beneficial State Foundation Sponsorship Fund of the Tides Foundation, and donors Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Please join them. Thank you. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WXOJ, Northampton, Massachusetts, 3ECB, Croydon, Victoria, WODU, Norfolk, Virginia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
The Mono Village Jazz Festival, now in its ninth year, happens Friday, August 19th through Sunday, August 21st. Montevilla Jazz supports community building and enriches local culture by showcasing original music made right here in Portland. More festival information can be found at montevillajazz.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bag and Baggage Productions presents The Tempest, performing from Thursday, August 11th through Sunday, August 28th in Hillsboro. This bilingual adaptation of William Shakespeare's The Tempest will be performed throughout various parks in Hillsboro. The Tempest is a story of love, redemption, forgiveness, and the nature of storytelling. That's Bag and Baggage Production presents The Tempest, performing from Thursday, August 11th through Sunday, August 28th in Hillsboro. More information can be found at kb.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
El colectivo Tonale, siempre con temas de actualidad. Escúchalo a través de KBOO 90.7 FM.
See, it's no in between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That
That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant. The only politics in this country that's relevant to black people today is the politics of revolution. None other.
Hard knock, hard knock, hard knock, hard knock radio, hard knock radio, hard knock radio.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. We want to talk about something that we talk about every year around this time, the history, the function, the importance of what we know as Black August. We also want to talk about the passing of somebody who would personify the work that is done around Black August in terms of freeing political prisoners. And we're talking about Alfred Woodfox, who passed on Friday. So joining us are two freedom fighters, Kalonji Changa from the Black Power Network down in Atlanta. And we also have Mama Ayana, Healthy Black Families, freedom fighter extraordinaire, and a historian when it comes to topics like this. And so Mama Ayana, we want to start with you because we can't do a show without you kind of breaking down the significance of Black August and what we need to know at noon. So I'm going to turn the mic to you and shoot that first question to you. What is Black August?
So thank you for having me on, inviting me to participate in this important conversation. To answer your question as briefly as possible, Black August is a commemoration, not a celebration. I want everyone to understand that. The practice originated in the concentration camps or the prisons of California in 1978 after the death of Katari Galdon. And Katari was the leader of the Black guerrilla family and the thought architect of Black August and its founding. Mm-hmm. The roots of Black August, though, come from the Black guerrilla family and the history of resistance by organizations, revolutionary organizations in the prisons of California. Its original and unchanging purpose is to honor and commemorate the lives and deaths of several fallen freedom fighters, among them, of course, Jonathan Jackson, whose mm-hmm. day was August 7th, George Jackson, who was murdered in the California prisons August 21st, W.L. Nolan, James McClain, William Christmas, and yes, Katari Galdon, who was killed in the San Quentin on August 1st. The other purpose is to bring unity among Black and African and New African prisoners and education and awareness to family members, friends, associates, and communities about the conditions of the in prisons, the oppression, degradation, torture that occurs, to build awareness of the support for the Black prison movement, and to educate our people about and honor the history and actions of the continued resistance of Black, New African, African peoples, the historical resistance to oppression, colonization, and slavery in the United States and throughout the diaspora, with particular emphasis on prisoners, political prisoners, freedom fighters, and all the works that have been done in resistance, in the name of revolutionary action and revolution and liberation in the prisons. Did I get that right, Kalonji?
Hey, right on. You know, you are, I'm the student, you the teacher. Absolutely, you're on point.
Yeah.
As always.
Good yes. to hear your voice, brother.
Hey, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on the right side of the barricades with you.
There you go. Yes. I'm glad that you were able to break this down. I think one of the challenges we have when we talk about Black August is, one, avoiding it be a cliche, and two, to make sure that there is a focus and an emphasis on the conditions in the concentration camps, as you described, Mama Ayana, or prisons. oftentimes that gets missed, and it gets missed, in my opinion, because it is hard work to stay in touch and to, you know, wrestle with that institution. Sometimes there's contradictions in the community. You know, some people want more, some people want less, you know, of it, et cetera, et cetera. It gets oversimplified. And so when we talk about the prison industrial complex and its supposed purpose of, you know, being a deterrent to crime, we get swept under the rugs. It's the very real scenario of the political prisoners in particular, you know, disappear. Kalonji, what would you add to this? What do you think we need to know? And am I correct in having that concern that sometimes people often, you know, kind of sweep the prison aspect under the rug when we talk about Black August?
Absolutely. I think that, first off, definitely thank you for inviting me along with Mamayana. I think it's, I want to start off by saying that it is definitely an honor to be able to be a voice to assist in carrying on this particular tradition, right? And I say it's an honor because I don't take it lightly at all. I'd like to add on that absolutely, as Mamayana pointed out, it is about resistance. And I think that when it comes to prison, much like our enslavement, oftentimes our people in particular want to sweep it under the rug. And we want to deal with the state's narrative because it's difficult to believe that that we can live under a system of such treachery and such a violent system. And we wouldn't believe, or we would like to forget, that it is a system of enslavement and that we must play the role of the abolitionists in order to liberate ourselves, right? So I think that it's often overlooked and swept. I often talk about brothers and sisters, you know, in our own families and friends. You know, we'll say, you know, such and such, you know, they got arrested or whatever. Okay, yeah, free Joey. You know what I mean? And once they go to trial, oftentimes folks forget about it. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily because you want to, but it's so much going on out here in general population that, you know, you often forget. But in regards to Black August, indeed, it is about resistance, and that's the most important thing. And I like the fact that Mamayana pointed out that this is something that was started by the Black guerrilla family, because oftentimes folks are afraid to say that. Mm-hmm. You know, they are afraid to say that in the state of California, inside of the prison camps, they have declared Black August gang-related, you know. It has nothing to do with any type of gang activities. It has to do with the strengthening of the mind, the body, the cadre, not just you as an individual, but your comrades and your friends and families and associates. And, you know, that is totally against what this particular system would like to see you do.
Right.
You know, they want you to follow the trend. They want you to stay on task. Whatever the trending topic is on Facebook or social media, they want you to pay attention to that. They want you to pay attention to you know, those who are meek. They want you to pay attention to who's the next billionaire, so on and so forth. But they don't want you to pay attention to the freedom fighters. Because one thing about our freedom fighters is part of the reason why they're in solitary in most cases is because they have the ability to recruit and attract others who may have came in as social prisoners. Yet, right. Once they're politicized, folks like the Malcolm X's and the George Jacksons, they become a new man, as you know, as Frantz Fanon would talk about.
That's the voice of Kalonji Tshanga. We also have Mama Ayana talking about Black August. Mama Ayana, you wanted to add some other context to this?
I did, Davey, because I think we have to understand that we have a community in the prisons. When the California Department of Corrections and the military governance or governing bodies that run these prisons criminalized Black August, they did so to try to discredit Black prison leadership. And we have millions of our people in these prisons. And so, and many of us, I'm sure, can remember a time when we had young men on the corners, and then they disappeared. Where did they go? They went inside the prisons, right? We had mass incarceration. And one of the reasons Black August was created, because we were already aware in the late 70s that there was a process of mass incarceration going on, that they were going to be building new prisons, and we knew who they planned to have in the prisons, right? The majority population of prisoners in California are Black. There's a disproportionate number of people in prisons around the country, and there's no oversight. And oversight and education and guidance for these young people that have gone in prisons comes from our political prisoners and from those that have came up through the ranks in the Black guerrilla family, the Black Liberation Army, the Black Panther Party, the Republic of New Africa, that were imprisoned during the war on Black America and during COINTELPRO. And so historically, our prison leadership have been freedom fighters and what we consider prisoners of war. And these are the people, and our liberation ideologies are what the prisons have tried to criminalize. Right. And these are the people who have been in leadership around Black August historically.
Let me ask either one of you this, Mamayana or Brother Kalanji. We toss around the word political prisoners a lot. And I think in your remarks, Kalanji, you said social prison, and then you talked about people being politicized. Do we have a definition from the perspective of those freedom fighters you talked about as to what is a political prison? I guess in one hand, we could say everybody is a political prisoner, just the way that this country's been set up and how it criminalizes people disproportionately, et cetera, et cetera. But has there been like a firm definition so that if I go out here and rob a grocery store, you know, and I go to jail, that might be a little different than if you or Kalanji go to jail because of the work that you're doing, the resistance work. But how do we define political prisoners?
For us, we've taken on the definition that a political prisoner is someone targeted or imprisoned because of their political actions, affiliations, and or beliefs. But also a political prisoner is a person who, while in prison, takes up and maintains political struggle. You know, and that would be folks like, you know, like we talked about, the social prisoners, you know, who came in and they didn't necessarily come in with political aspirations, but through the pressure or just through the educational process, becoming politicized, you know, and having that ability, as I mentioned earlier, to influence others in and out of the prisons. Because we have to keep in mind one important thing is when we talk about Black August, we are still inspired by these brothers who were inside of the prison camp. And I think the one thing that's often looked as well is that there has been traditionally a serious prison movement. You know, we fight on the streets, but simultaneously, there are struggles inside of the camps. And I say that to say because one of the things we often talk about is the fact that it's between 1,100 and 1,400 people who are murdered on the streets by police. But we don't talk about the fact that every year there's at least 900 brothers and sisters who are being murdered inside the prison camps as well.
Wow.
You know, we often overlook that because, you know, whatever we feel doesn't affect or impact us, you know, we often, you know, we shy away from.
In terms of political prisoners, you know, we recently had the picture of basketball star Brittany Griner on the cover of a magazine, and they put the word political prisoner, and people have rallied around that. Is she a political prisoner? Because I've seen some pretty healthy debates around that.
Under the under what we would describe as a political prisoner, based on our Black Liberation Movement, our New African Independence Movement. No, she is not a political prisoner, but based on the United States diplomatic understanding of what a political prisoner is, she is. So that's two different definitions. When we're talking about political prisoners, we're talking about people who have fought for the liberation and committed acts of resistance for Black and other oppressed peoples. Now, she's in prison in Russia. However people want to choose to organize and strategize around her release based on the fact that she's unjustly imprisoned, that's another definition and another level of work. I also want to just take a moment, speaking of political prisoners, to honor Dr. Mutulu Shakur today. Today is his birthday. Mm-hmm. He is a New African political prisoner and prisoner of war, having been held, I can't remember all the number of years. I think it's since 1982 or 1983.
Right.
It's been, 40 years now. And he's been given less than 6 months to live, and he should have a compassionate release. So there is a movement to free Mutulu, to have him released. We haven't talked about Alfred Woodfox yet, but I know you wanted to speak a little more about him, who spent, 36 years in prison.
43, I believe.
Excuse me. And Dr. Mutulu Shakur's birthday today is a call to action for him. There is a webinar happening this afternoon or this evening, led by Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, that will be taking place. So go to their website, which I think is www.mxgm.org. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you in a minute. And join in the movement to free Mutulu from prison and get him a compassionate release so that he can live out the rest of his life with his family and get quality care. So it is freethelandmxgm.org.
Thank you for that. As you know, as you were talking, Mama Ayana, and we hear these long sentences, you know, many who have languished in jail and were not given compassionate release.
In isolation,
that's what I was going to get at. Yeah. There seems to be a fear that people would not only be put away for so long, but spending 30, 40 years in isolation. Can we talk a little bit about that? And maybe this is a good time to maybe even focus on the life and struggle and the legacy of Albert Woodfox, who was part of the Angola 3. You know, when I first heard about the Angola 3, I heard about it from somebody who was locked up in Angola State Prison in Louisiana. And the brother that I knew there said that one of the things that the guards would do to threaten the general population is he would say, they would tell them, said, if you keep it up, you're going to wind up like Woodfox in them, meaning the Angola 3. And that was an indication that they're going to put them in isolation and and do all these crazy things. So they would use their names as a threat to people who they felt were unruly, you know, in Angola, you know, the state prison. And, you know, and that's the first time I heard, you know, about the Angola 3 was from somebody who was just there, you know, on, you know, some other crime. But let's talk a little bit about the Angola 3, and in particular, Albert Woodfox, who passed.
Yeah, Albert spent over 40 years in solitary. He wrote a book called Solitary that talks about the story of his life behind bars, 4 decades in solitary confinement. What is that? A 6x9 or 6x8 foot cell where you have either a metal or concrete bed, often no mattresses, no, it's also sensory deprivation, which has been classified as torture, right? And subject to torture on the whims of the guards and the personnel of the prison. Often hidden is the fact that our people, our prisoners, our in particular our political prisoners, are subject to consistent torture and sensory deprivation as a form of torture, and often exposed to violent actions. So Albert was imprisoned as a Black Panther, and he was part of the Angola Three. So they were charged with
murdering a corrections officer.
Yeah, I'm sorry, murdering a correction officer. Thank you, Kalanji.
Yes.
And they were held together in one of the worst prisons documented, one of the worst prisons in the United States, in segregated housing units, or the SHU. And they were targeted for their activism as members of the Black Panther Party. And this type of imprisonment, torture, confinement is not uncommon. And they fought for decades to expose the prison system, expose the conditions that were happening in prison, and yes, and fought for their freedom because they were unjustly imprisoned. So
when we hear that the murder of a correction officer, mm-hmm. there are people that would sit back and go, well, you know, they got what they deserved, they shouldn't have done that, and it layers and complexities, and oftentimes it overlooks the torturous conditions that go on inside these places. Can we kind of give some insight into that so that it doesn't become a cliched throwaway line? Well, they did something bad, they got what they deserved. How do you look at that, Kalanji? How do we process that?
Yeah, well, first of all, they were proven innocent, you know, of that situation, you know, and the correction officer, Brent Miller, to our understanding, he was a person that was involved in a number of different violations of prisons. You know, so, you know, we don't necessarily mourn those who torture us, but at the same time, we don't take credit for, you know, any efforts that weren't made by us either. You know, so they were falsely accused. And I wanted to point out, you know, here's a man who served 43 years, close to 44 years in solitary in that 6x9 foot cell that Mamayana talked about. And it was 23 hours a day, right? So, you know, you're talking about claustrophobia, you're talking about beatings, you're talking about torture, gassings. They would actually talk about how they would gas them if they, you know, if they protested the inhumane conditions that existed inside that prison. And we want to point out, too, because when we say the Angola Three, we're talking about, you know, Rising Power, Herman Wallace. We're talking about Robert King and, of course, you know, Albert Woodfox. But they were the Angola Three because they were in Angola prison, which was built on a former plantation, an actual plantation, you know, and Angola is modeled after Angola, you know, Africa, South Africa, you know, so it's not just some, you know, play on words or cliche. This is the real deal. That's how they felt about it. You know, these are brothers who served time literally on a plantation and who were shackled and beaten and, you know, mistreated, you know, and Albert Woodfox is the longest held political prisoner in solitary confinement. He's not the longest held political prisoner, but the longest held political prisoner in solitary confinement. You know, you have others like Sekou Odinga, who I believe did about 33 years in solitary. You know, so, you know, it's important that that we remember that it's one thing to be imprisoned, but it's another thing to be imprisoned inside of prison.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? So, you know, that's the type of, you know, the racist guards and wardens that they had to deal with on a day-to-day for, you know, in many cases, more time than many of your listeners have been on the planet.
And not only that, and I have to say, as a former formerly incarcerated person who spent a short amount of time in solitary confinement, I can tell you that it's a horrendous experience. We have to understand when we talk about abolition and what that means is that the conditions that so often that Black people in prison are subjected to, when we, for example, when we talk about Mutulu, there were times when to target Mutulu, a prison would lock down all the Black prisoners, right?
Mm.
When we talk about being locked down, we're talking about trauma, compounded trauma, the fear of your life, for your life, right? When we talk about gas, we're talking about poison gas, gas that often has nervines in it, that hurts when you touch your body. When they spray water on you, then they gas you, it's burning you.
Right.
When you talk about sensory deprivation, this means that you are not speaking to or touching another human being for decades upon decades of your life. You know, you might get visits. Oftentimes our prisoners in solitary confinement are put in places that are hard to reach, that are their families are kept away from their families and their loved ones and any contact with the outside world. So we're not just speaking about someone being in a cell and like you see in the movies and they come out and there's interaction. We're talking about no interaction, no touch, no connection. No, often the lights are on all day and you might get an hour in the sunlight a week or 2 hours. So these type of conditions are horrendous. And when we talk about a man like Albert Woodfox, who maintained his humanity, maintained his politics, came out and continued to resist, you know, exposed the conditions, we're talking about a true revolutionary hero.
Right. One of the things, as you were talking, Mama Ayanna and Brother Kalonji, we had our pandemic lockdown. And just to kind of give this context, people were upset, angry. There were marches and demonstrations saying the kids are locked up in the apartment and, you know, and they're going crazy and this is that and the third, and they wanted laws changed and schools reopened and all sorts of things. And people were really going, you know, crazy. When we had to, you know, when we were told to stay isolated in our houses, you know, for 2 or 3 weeks and et cetera, et cetera. And I want to contrast the rhetoric that came out of that and the discomfort that people expressed with the torturous conditions that you described. People couldn't handle 2 weeks, 2 months, maybe a year, you know, during the pandemic. And we're talking about people who were being tortured who did 43. You know, with people, those very same people complaining wouldn't have even given any of these folks a second thought. And I just want to kind of contextualize that if you couldn't deal with the pandemic stuff, and you might have a 3 or 4, you know, rooms in your apartment or house, what are we talking about when we're looking at, you know, the Mutulu Shakurs, the, you know, the Momias, you know, Abu Jamals, the, you know, the H-Rap Browns. I mean, there's scores of folks that have done this, and they did it, and a lot of times they were in these prisons for fighting on our behalf as Black people to improve our overall conditions. And the fact that they were able to maintain some sort of, you know, sense of their humanity and continue to fight is something that I think we all should take a huge step back and pause, and really, you know, like, you know, thank you for the service. Like, I mean, I don't know if words can even express, you know, at least what I'm feeling based upon what you described, Mama Ayanna. I mean, that is just, you know, shame on us for complaining about something that is pretty light compared to what is routinely experienced by so many of our people.
Michelle McGee's going on 60 years. He's on in his 59th year. You know what I'm saying? And like you said, folks are complaining about 2 weeks. But I think that's one thing about us being the most arrogant slaves on the planet. You know, it's like we are so spoiled. Even when we talk about Black August, we talk about the aspect of fasting. I get some of the roughest, toughest cats that make so many excuses about fasting. And man, you going to fast every day that month? Yeah. And you talking about 4 days for 24 hours a day? How can you do that? I'm like, listen, man, there are folks who have been on hunger strikes longer than a month. You understand what I'm saying? Eating nothing. And the fact to me, those flea days, those 4 days, to me, I think about the fact that W.L. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards,
William Christmas,
Jonathan and George, and Qatari, and so many others who are no longer here. You know what I'm saying? So if we can, a 24-hour period for us to fast is just in honor of these brothers and sisters out there who have fought on our behalf, should be cake. It should be a simple task. We shouldn't even look at it as a struggle.
Right.
Because at least we have the opportunity, we're blessed to know that we have the opportunity to eat after that fast is up.
You and know, drink.
Yes. And on top of that, you know, one beautiful thing about Black August, you know, I'm Muslim as well. So during Ramadan, you're not drinking any water. But with Black August, at least you can drink water. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, these complaints, I mean, I don't understand, to me, you know, folks run around playing revolution. You know what I'm saying? All of this sound good, the empty rhetoric, the fashionable militancy, you know, the tough talk about what they would do and what they wouldn't have went for back in the day and all this other nonsense. We know it's malarkey. We know it's pure game. And folks need to just sit down and shut up if you're not willing to do something other than say you demand reparations. What are you going to do to get reparations?
All right, Kalonji. And I would say I don't want folks to shut up. I do want folks to continue to resist in whatever area of work that you do. If you are commemorating Black August, commemorate it. And it does have the tenets of Black August: to fast, to study, to train, to educate, to resist. And so we do encourage people to fast from Baba Shaka, who suggested we fast from 6 a.m., 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., or 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., and also study. This is a time where we turn off our televisions and our commercial radio, and we study, we read, and we now, of course, there's access to so much knowledge and information on the internet. We can read about our history, the history of our movements and the history of our leaders in the movement. We can read about prison abolition, which we do have to talk about abolishing the 13th. That's one of the part of the work that the Black August Organizing Committee committed to at the Black August Conference that took place in Oakland in 2018. Mm-hmm. We can train. That means you can do, you pay attention and build the strength and the resistance of your body and your mind. And as far as fasting, people are encouraged to fast. But if you are an elder or you are on medications, you need to follow the directions that go along with that. If you need to have some food to take your meds, have some food to take your meds, but make it healthy food. We also encourage people to avoid shopping in large corporations and support local Black businesses. And part of the education needs to be that we bring this conversation around abolishing the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment was passed in 1865 after emancipation. It's the 13th Amendment to the Constitution. It's celebrated for abolishing slavery and involuntary servitude, but it includes an exception clause that has been understood throughout history to allow slavery and involuntary servitude to be used as punishment for crimes. So basically, we're talking about it legalizes slavery in prisons.
Right. And I would just add that, you know, people should look at the institution of the penal justice system, where people were arrested, massively arrested at the turn of the century and made to work mm-hmm. on plantations and farms with the 13th Amendment as their backing. So, you know, there's all these documentaries and documents that can show 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds that were rounded up for Black laws, you know, vagrancies and things like that that were put into place. And then they were disappeared and made to work on these farms. And so it was called slavery under another name. And so that was a sordid legacy that we need to look at.
Kalani, it's still going on. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I don't mean to interrupt, but it's still going on in prisons. Our prisoners are making less than $1 a day sometimes for supporting organizations like ATT and Levi Strauss and, of course, their state license plates. You know, we have prisoners working for multiple multinational corporations and states, free labor.
Yeah,
I want to clarify something real quick. And to Mamayana's point, yeah, when I was locked up in '88, and we were making $3.25 every 2 weeks, so definitely that was in the state of South Carolina. I want to point out, because I said something earlier, I said in regards to shut up. When I'm talking about shutting up, I'm talking about resistance. I'm saying if you're not going to resist, I'm not saying if you're not fasting, because we're well aware that, you know, everyone can't fast. And there's reasons, there's medical reasons, there's health reasons, or what have you. But I'm saying if you refuse to resist, if you're not doing anything for our people, don't complain about folks who are doing something. You know what I'm saying? If you're just sitting back in the comfort of your own home, given your opinion, and your opinion has no merit, and you're not willing to do anything, including support or even retweeting something that someone else is doing that may be of value, then I say shut up. So that's what I meant by that. I don't want folks to think that I'm saying that, you know, if you're not fasting, then shut up. No, that's ridiculous.
We hear you on that and appreciate it. Let me ask you both this. And we were talking, you know, last night, and I wanted to bring this up, that the fight for abolition, the fight to improve these prisons or eradicate them altogether, has been a long, hard and fought one. And there's been some legal victories moving in that direction. You know, the bail reform legislation, allowing people to be let out during times of COVID and other situations, compassionate releases, those types of scenarios. That didn't come because of the benevolence of the state or any of those institutions. It came because of that resistance work that you all have been talking about, many of it coming out of the prison movements, out of people like yourselves who have been fighting and fighting and fighting. And, you know, and one of the offshoots may have been a crumb here and a crumb there in some movement in terms of legislation. So I bring this up to say that as we move down this path, there's been a clapback. And that clapback is now looking, saying, hey, there's a crime wave going on outside, Brother Kalonji. And you know why? It's because of bail reform. We need to revoke that. There's a crime wave going on, Mama Ayana, in Oakland or in San Francisco. So we're going to put a new DA, which they did, into place. And what she's going to do is she's going to take all those minor drug offenses that were kind of plea dealt, and we're going to reverse that. Everybody's got to get locked up. And you have somebody like Mayor Adams in New York City, who is sitting there talking about the reason why crime is out of control is because of bail reform. So we need to revoke that. Let's get new legislation and let's lock them all up. This is in spite of the fact that by their own exposés, they're saying, hey, most of the crimes that's been occurring has been just like a small handful of people. But the narrative is, we need to build more prisons, we need to have harsher sentences, we need to lock these up, and the type of efforts and conversation and things that people like yourselves have been advocating is the blame for the disruptions that we're seeing going on. How do we respond to that? How do we contextualize that?
Well, we know that the prisons have a really big lobby. You know, they're lobbyists all over, and they're consistently trying to put a spin to divert public, in particular public funds, to building private prisons, and also supporting all the businesses and all the monies. We're talking about billions of dollars a year across this country going to coffers of private organizations and corporations based on prisons and the labor, as I said, and the lives of our people in prison. As I started our conversation with, we have a whole community in prisons. The level of crime that's happening on these streets is not because of bail reform, and because people were released so that they could have access to health and healthcare during COVID. It is because of the economic oppression and the transfer of wealth, huge transfer of wealth that has happened during COVID. We're talking about four major companies having most of the wealth of this country. We're talking about people that are hungry, people that are being unhoused. We are talking about mass displacement, historical, unprecedented mass displacement from Black people from their homes. We are talking about corporate ownership of housing and huge rent increases. We are talking about the cost of food being doubled. We are talking about our utilities going up, our water going up. We are talking about the inadequate access to health care and mental health care. There is no place in Alameda County that is dedicated to the health and well-being of African American people with culturally congruent services. We are talking about birth inequities. And when we talk about institutional and structural racism and the growth of what people call white supremacy in the United States, we're talking about our people not having access to the basic needs of life on a daily basis. So when we're talking about crime, I'm not trying to make excuses for anything that anyone does. We understand that there is a lot of trauma and harm happening to people in multiple communities, but we have to look at the conditions that are creating the actions.
Real talk. Appreciate that, Brother Kalonji.
Yeah, I would add that, you know, we have to remember that free labor is the foundation of U.S. economics. You know what I'm saying? It is the core. It is what this quote unquote nation stands on. It stands on genocide. It stands on free labor, servitude. That's what it's always been about. So, you know, naturally, when the George Floyd situation was going on, the Rayshard Brooks situation was going on, again, you know, during that time, during the past couple of years, at least 2,200 people were murdered by the police, right? So the thing is, there had to be some type of concessions. So all the mayors decided they do this and that, and you have, you know, your man MC Adams up there, MCA, being a hip hop mayor, and you know, you have Andre Dickens here in Atlanta, you know, trying to talk about this is going to be a cultural hub, you know, while selling the city out, gentrifying, so on and so forth. We know that it's all game and it's all garbage. So they need these police because we recognize that the police unions themselves are the mafia, and they have to have their employees. They have to have the hitters out there. So they need to incarcerate. They need to snatch folks up because it's all about the money. They need to get you trapped in the system, because even if you're pulled over here or you're locked up for whatever reason, it's going to be costly. It's going to cost you something. If it's for nothing but towing your car and you're going to go back to court, they're going to put you on some type of probation, you know. So it's all about that money. So, you know, it's not a surprise, you know, that they're going to say that the crime wave is up. Yeah, the crime is up because the police are up. You know what I'm saying? That's why the crime is up, because of the conditions. You know, folks are hungry. Like Mama Ayanna said, folks are trying to survive. You have so many people out here on the streets of Atlanta, just like the streets of Oakland and San Francisco and so many other places around the country. This is supposed to be the greatest nation on the planet, is what they say. But yet you have full families sleeping on the sidewalk, you know, right, in the dead of winter. You know, we literally see, you know, and they say that there are no men in the household. I've seen men, women, and children sleeping on the sidewalk in the dead of winter, right here in Atlanta. And folks passing by them to go to a basketball game or go to a concert or go to whatever the case is. So again, it's all about the money. And we have to, we can't stress enough community control of not only public safety, but community control of politics and the whole nine. But it has to begin at a local level, because we get so caught up in who the next president's gonna be and all that type of garbage and all that's nonsense. We have to worry about what's going on in your community and in your city.
I wanted to also have you on because you're in a state called Georgia, where it's actually against the law, you know, to defund any sort of police. You know, I mean, that was enshrined in law. And yet the problems that we have here in Oakland are the same ones you have in Georgia, not just Atlanta, but all throughout, you know, from Savannah on down. It's the same problems they have throughout Texas, another place where, you know, it's impossible to reduce the budgets, you know. Yet the same rhetoric is being raised up, the same excuse for increases in crime is made, the same complaints by police saying that nobody likes them and that they're not being treated fairly and they've been defunded is used whether they're in Mississippi or in California. And it just seems like that is a well-orchestrated clapback that we should be aware. And it's always good when we have people from different parts of the country to compare notes and go, well, how are they saying the same thing in Georgia that they're saying in Oakland when the laws are very, very different, you know? You know, how they come to the same conclusion where it's literally against the law to do what they say is happening. And if people don't have that understanding and don't have those conversations, they may think that what they're dealing with is very unique versus something that is very systemic and well-oiled and part of a larger plan, which I think comes back to, you know, increasing. I called it the penal leasing system, but it was called the convict leasing system. And that's something that we need to be aware of. As we close out, I want to let you all get some last words and directions and marching orders, and I'll start off with you, Mama Ayanna.
I just wanted to tell you, you made a really good point, Davey D. And as we have a movement to abolish prisons, to defund police, to continue to resist on all levels, we do have to understand there is a well-funded, well-oiled machine historically that it is organized to do the exact opposite, right? That looks at, in particular, Black and brown people as potential wage slaves and expendable collateral.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that these times are as serious as ever, and that we have to be unified and come together and strategize and resist together, that we must also not just fast study, train, educate. We also have to continue. Black August is 365 days a year, as the Black August Organizing Committee would say. And it is really important that we care for ourselves and others, but at the same time, resist as much as possible and in as many ways as possible. One of the other things I would like to say before we close is to invite people to Bobby Shaka's memorial.
Right.
Place. If you don't know who Bobby Shaka Athenin is, he is one of the co-founders of Black August, a former political prisoner who worked his whole life in resistance and to the oppression and for the prisoners and political prisoners, and was a Baba to many, a community organizer and an educator. And he died after a bout with cancer on April 19th, and we are finally having his memorial on August 21st in Oakland from 2 to 6 p.m. at the East Oakland Youth Development Center. And I believe the address is 8200 or 8201 International Boulevard. It's on 82nd and the corner of 82nd and International.
Right.
And the community is invited to commemorate, honor, and memorialize who he is.
Thank you for that, Mama Ayanna. We appreciate you sharing your wisdom and insight. Brother Kalonji, we got about 30 seconds, so let's get your last comments.
Yeah, I just say definitely long live OG Shaka, Black August Resistance, long live the Dragon. I say join an organization with a system of accountability and responsibility, not just one that chases whatever's trending or whatever's popular. Revolution Resistance is not a competition. It's not popular and it's not politically correct. Check us out at thepeoplesarmy.org, thepeoplesarmy.org if you're looking to learn more about what we do or about Black August, thepeoplesarmy.org. Thank you.
This is how we ride and roll. Soldier for life, for sure.